Welcome to another episode of That's So Cincinnati. Jason Williams, Sherry Coolidge, Silent Phil in the ones and twos. Jeff Cameron, FC Cincinnati player, is our special guest today. We got some fun questions for him. Sherry,
I know I took a crash course in learning about soccer this morning.
So we're looking forward to having Jeff join us here in a few minutes. But first,
I do follow the team and like what's going on and like a good Cincinnati.
Well, it's funny because when you're like, hey, let's get Jeff Cameron from FC Cincinnati. And I was like, are they still playing?
They are still playing, Jason.
I believe in transparency. So that's what I asked Sherry when she said that.
So we're recording on Wednesday afternoon, a little later than usual, because we appreciate Jeff joining us.
Yeah.
You know, his training schedule and everything. But I bet you didn't expect me to be done with council this soon. Now, did you?
No, I didn't. I didn't think we'd be able to do it this afternoon because of council. And that's what I wanted to ask you about. Council was very quick today, Sherry.
I mean, shockingly so. I mean, if you looked at the agenda, you would think that it was going to go quick, but I expected, as you know, in the summer, I kind of looked forward to what these final months were going to look like because it's the second, this is the 4-year term. And I was thinking, like, what is going to look, City Hall, you know, I think we put somebody's corruption arrest. There's two pending, but right, like last year was really marked by that. The budget kind of took over the beginning of this year, that pandemic budget with the CARES Act money. But this is it. These people are term limited out for the most part. There's some appointed people. But what were these last months going to look like? What were they going to do? And I had some thoughts, but it turns out the answer is
nothing. Well, that was going to be my question to you.
I mean, there's still time, I suppose, but I'm not seeing these big ideas, these conversations that this is the one thing that I wanted to do.
Yep.
Before the end of my council career, for the city, for the citizens.
You're right. And that was going to be my question to you, and you teed it up for me, though. Is it, are they done here with still just under 2 months left in the term?
You know what's something that's really that I've thought back? I was doing, of course, I'm looking at issue 3 because that's my whole life, basically. But I was looking back at all the charter amendments that were passed under this council, and I think I have a list of them, so look for that in Cincinnati.com. That's the harder list to put together than you would think.
Yeah.
As everyone around me knows, they might have heard some swear words said once or twice about how there's no, like, clearinghouse for those. But I'm off topic. So
I never heard
one of the – in the last kind of like 8 years, one of the things that changed was the idea that they would move the council start date from the beginning of December to the first Tuesday of January. And, you know, that was kind of a minor cleanup thing. There was not for or against it. It was always considered a cleanup thing. That now, to me, seems like a long time between November 2nd, because the election's a little earlier this year, and the first Tuesday of January. That's like a 2-month period of an actual lame duck council, even though now I'm like, has that already started?
Yeah. That's right. There's actually over 2 months still left in the term. And yeah, it's a great question. And it's interesting. You start to sit and think back, as I remember when I first came to the Inquirer in 2012, May of 2012, that was, you know, later that year was when John Cranley, Roxanne Qualls, the campaign started for the following year in 2013 with Mark Mallory being termed out. And that's right. Cause I remember when Cranley won, what was the big first topic when they took over December 1st?
Now, Jason, don't throw that softball at me.
To do or not
the
to do.
The streetcar.
Oh, what drama it was. What drama it was. But yes.
But you know what, though? Think about that last term before John Cranley took over. There were major important topics facing this city, which were the streetcar and what was going to happen with it, because that was a big idea that had a lot of problems.
Replacing the police chief
and privatizing parking. Like, how are we going to handle this going forward? And, like, there were, like, really weighty topics being discussed. I'm telling you, they renamed some streets today for some very worthy people, and they
adjourned.
Reappointed Susan Castellini to the park board, who, please, I do encourage people to go back to my Marina story and look at that voice of reason and why she belongs on the park board.
Yeah.
So that's what happened today. There were not weighty issues being, you know, kind of tossed around there.
So just sort of finishing, just sort of meh is how this council is going to finish. And I mean, how do I say this? Maybe that's the best, given what this term has been like.
I won't weigh in on that, but every month where something's not happening and moving the city forward is a month lost. Those are not months.
No, you're right.
Those are not months that are like, oh, right now, oh my goodness, something's not happening. Those are months that you see later. These kind of things come home to roost, you know, in the term after.
That's a great point.
In the years after, right? Like, you know, we saw the movement on the banks and the Fountain Square, you know, moving the fountain and redoing that. In the moment, you weren't like, wow, we put a board in the ground for the banks and the fountain just got moved a little bit. Today, the banks are the banks, whatever we might say about them. There is a banks there. And Fountain Square is this vibrant, active place. And because those things happened at a certain point in time.
Under Mark Mallory laid a lot of the foundation for those things.
Definitely.
He worked hard on the banks with the commissioners and yeah, but yeah, right. Like some of those things, well, still like you said, the banks are still not complete, but these steps wouldn't have been able to be taken without the steps he took back, over a decade ago.
Time is critical.
That's right. And what I meant by that is maybe it's the best in that because of how many problems there's been with this council. But no, you're right. In terms of getting basic things done for the city, you were put there to do the job of the people. And you're supposed to do it all the way up until the second that your term expires in, what do you say, January 2nd?
Yeah.
I believe so. Yeah. Anyway, we'll stay tuned. I mean, the biggest story out of City Hall, even from the council recently, has been even about this election, issue 3. We're not going to go down that path right now.
Because you all know, thank you for paying attention.
Right. But, you think about it, it's like, oh, wait. And it's like, this has nothing to do with...
It's not something they did. It's something they're reacting to and, you know, a mistake that was made. That has been like the dominant conversation of like the last 2 months of something that somebody brought forward and how they feel about
it. And you got the mayor out running for governor. And it just seems like it's over for this council and mayor, that it's done and it just feels that way.
I know. But nobody worry. Jason and I will be watching.
And that's unfortunate because, like I said, hey, you signed up. You were elected to serve out your term. And no matter when that is, whether you're a lame duck or not, termed out, whatever, you owe to the taxpayers, the voters, the citizens to finish strong. Anyway, let's jump over, bring on our special guest, FC Cincinnati's Jeff Cameron. Special guest time here on the That's So Cincinnati podcast. I'm pleased to welcome FC Cincinnati's Jeff Cameron. Jeff, how you doing?
Yeah, pretty good. Can't complain.
You're on your off day. What do you do on an off day?
Yeah, I would like to sleep in for a couple hours, but with my little boy and my missus, we usually do like a fun kind of fun day activity. And today we went to Blooms and Berries, I think is what it's called. The pumpkin patch is our second time going there, and they have amazing things for kids and for him just kind of run around, and he's obsessed with tractors and all that kind of stuff. So it was a good day.
Northern Kentucky, then, Big Pumpkin Farm. The Coolidges have been there. It is everything you say.
Yeah. It's really, really, really cool. So, then just got home, kind of got to put my feet up for a little bit while the little man was napping. And then now we try to figure out, like, are we going to go to Lunkin Park or Alt Park, or what does he want to do? So we try to get out of the house a little bit.
And he's two, right?
Especially. Yeah.
Got a lot of energy.
Almost two. Yes. So it's good though. It's, this area, I would say Cincinnati in general, like kind of, in the Hyde Park area, is pretty amazing. You know, it's, you know, super kid friendly families, you know, walking the kids and dogs and all that. It's a really cool location. Some good coffee shops, so I can't complain.
Did it play into your decision to come here? I mean, Cincinnati is obviously known as being very family friendly. Did it play into your decision to say, I'm going to come to FC Cincinnati?
And to our listeners, that you signed before the season this year. This is your first season with FC.
In May, after we started.
Or yeah, after we started, but yeah.
Yeah. It was definitely going through our minds for sure. You know, it's definitely having the mentality, like, you know, when I had an offer to stay at QPR for a couple years, and you know, I was over there for close to 10 years. And you know, we were kind of making the decision. We were going to plan on coming back, but thinking that I would have some time, about 6 to 7 weeks, 8 weeks off, and then try to make my decision essentially. But the conversations picked up pretty quickly. Once I kind of said, I'm not going to resign at QPR. I want to look elsewhere. I want to look back in the States and the MLS. And then that's when kind of our conversations with Cincinnati picked up, pretty quickly. And that's when it was just like, okay, yeah, well, this is a possibility. And I had a friend, here. My missus had a friend, and she reached out to like kind of tell us a little bit about Cincinnati. And they gave us some recommendations, but I think the hardest part was trying to find a place to live, because, you know, coming from where we were living in West London, and there was some really, really nice, you know, kind of a family home environment, and the neighborhood was awesome because you just walk out and a minute walk down the street and there's a couple parks around you. Then you go to the fishmonger, the butcher, you get your veggies at an Italian place right on the stand. Like it was really, really, really cool. And we kind of wanted that kind of similar environment. And we couldn't find a house. There was no houses on the market to rent or buy or anything like that.
These past months, we've been the number one housing market in the country for like quick sales, and it has been crazy here.
I know. So the house that we own in Florida, the realtor that we went through, he was like, let me see if I can do some help, because the club were trying to do whatever they could to help us. And there was just really no stock available, essentially, and we were just like, At some point, you're just like, I don't know if this is going to happen, because we couldn't really find a place. And then, you know, our realtor down in Florida, he's like, listen, I have a really good friend of mine, this lady Beth. She's a realtor. She handles all these players that come from like the Miami Dolphins or Tampa Bay. They go to the Bengals or anyone up there. She sorts out their house and gets them sorted right away. And then she found our place and reached out to houses that were on the market for more than like 20 days that haven't been purchased. And she just reached out to her like, hey, would you be up to like renting the house out? And we're like, yes, please. Just get one out of 14 asks. And we took it.
So, have you had a chance to go to Finley Market yet? I do think I'm just guessing here that you work a lot on the weekends.
Finley Market downtown?
Yes.
Yes. That was one of the first places we went to. And that was super, super cool. And we also stumbled upon, you might know, like there's that little taco truck, and it has like a wine bar. It's actually like a really, really cool wine bar. And then another bar connected to it, but then they have like, it's like kind of a,
I do know what you're talking about.
A food truck that's kind of right in the middle of them. And it's just kind of like you can purchase, you know, tacos, empanadas, everything. And then you just see people sitting. It's a small little, like, I guess, patio area. And it was kind of cool. So we brought our, it was on one Sunday. We're like, oh, let's go check this out. So that was pretty cool too.
You were playing in Europe since you left the Houston Dynamo in 2012, and you returned to the States this season, obviously to play with FC Cincinnati. And I know you come home during the off season and you play for the U.S. national team as well. But was that a big readjustment for you coming back to America, not just for professionally, but also personally?
Yeah, for sure. My missus and I, we talk about it a lot. There are certain things that we miss, you know, over there, and just the lifestyle and things are different. But there were, like, when you're over there, there's a lot of things that you miss from the States as well. So I guess, you know, you can't always say, I wish you could be there. It's nice to go be there and visit for a little bit. But, you know, the U.S. is my home, and obviously dual citizenship helps now that, you know, I can go to England, no problem. I miss my son and everything. So, and he's got dual citizenship because he was born there. So, but it definitely, when you're in the mentality, I guess when I'm playing over in Europe, it was great because I could come home and I could have my time with my family, my off season for a little bit and playing or whatever. And I'd kind of get those fixes throughout the season of like, and a national team game, boom, I'm flying to the U.S. I'd be there for a week or so, or maybe 11 days. And then I'm flying back. And then that would kind of give me like, the home away from home, quota, you could say, of just me coming back to the States. Okay. I had enough. And then I'm going back to the UK and whatever. But it definitely kind of made it easier as a transition, you could say. But then when you're over here for your off season for 3 weeks, you're like, I can't wait to get to my own spot and just my own bedroom and not in hotels or not in this friend's house or this house or this house. You just get into your routines. And I think that's the one thing that you miss. But no, you know, coming back here in the States is definitely been an adjustment, but it's been a really, really cool adjustment because we're settled here now and our main place is in Florida, but we're settled here in Cincinnati. We're loving the city. We're loving the, everything this place has to offer. I would say it's a sleeper city. I think it's just the only thing that we're missing is obviously the results on the pitch. And I think that will come sooner or later. It's obviously going to take time.
And this is probably what you would call a bad segue in podcasting, but you know, talking about coming home to America and the fact that you were on the U.S. national team for several years. And, I know you've also, you're patriotic and you've been outspoken on social media at times about where you stand politically. You've said, hey, you support Donald Trump, or you supported him obviously when he was president. Talk about that and sort of, you know, your willingness to do that.
Yeah, you know, it's a touchy subject now, and more than anything, it's, you know, I just find it, you know, it was tough. I don't. As of recent, I haven't really said much just because of just the way the world is now and everybody is, you know, it's really hard to have an opinion. And if you don't have an opinion that's similar to other people or views. And, I think that's just sad in a way of where I grew up. And, you know, I think, you know, 20 years ago, it wasn't that way. And I think it's hard of, you know, with the news and, you know, social media, all the big, you know, social media giants. And it's just kind of one way. And it's kind of like things are shoved down people's throats, whether it's good or bad or whatever. And if you have one particular political view, it's wrong. And then the other side is the same way. So for me, it was tough when I was outspoken and I said certain things, you know, Twitter and Instagram and all that kind of stuff, and more Twitter because that's where I said stuff and or some interviews or whatever. And a lot of people said things about me that weren't true whatsoever. I think that was really, really hard to deal with. Saying, you know, inappropriate things about me and how I am as a person, but they don't know me. And, you know, and I look around and I just said, like, this is where, you know, people that are just saying things to be hateful and whatever. So that's why I don't really share pictures with my family and stuff like that, just because, you know, I don't really know what people's our intentions are. And when you've said things in the past and people will be like, you know, like hateful things, because you just have a different political view, it's hard. So I try to stay away from that. And, you know, I don't really, I haven't as engaged or been as outspoken now, just because I'm, you know, I'm, there's other things I care about, and other things that I, you know, I just don't let things bother me or affect me in a way. And I just don't want to bring up say something. And, you know, I'm sure there's fans in Cincinnati that they're, you know, they're conservative or liberal or whatever. But the one thing they can agree is whether they want to believe the stuff that I believe in or disagree with the things that I believe, that they'll see I am a good, genuine person. And, you know, it's okay to have people with different political views or religious views or anything, but you can respect them as a hard person, like as a person. And I'm showing that I'm working my tail off every single week. So that's kind of how I leave it, really.
We're very proud of our fanness here in Cincinnati and how rabid we can be. How have you found our fans, like, compared to other places?
They're phenomenal. They're the best in the league. And, you know, having the experience of playing all over the U.S. and the MLS before and in Europe and stuff, our facilities, our stadium, our fans, you know, we haven't had the great results, but they're still showing up and they're still supporting us. And that is a European side. Like, if they're not doing well, the fans are still there and they are fighting for you and they're trying to, like, through thick and thin, essentially. And, the fans deserve so much credit. As we're going through a stage of transition and, you know, things will get better, that the fans stick in with us and they're showing up for every game and they're cheering us on. They're amazing fans.
So you did play as part of the men's national team. We're having this big game here in November on the 12th. What can you kind of explain to us, like, what that means for Cincinnati to get a game like this?
It's huge, especially to take it from Columbus, for sure. But, you know, like, them playing in a lot of Mexico-U.S. games, it's a huge, huge game. It's our biggest rival, and there's always the, you know, 2-0, and, you know, you're expected to win 2-0. You know, it's a different atmosphere, because it's not just the club team. It's the U.S. versus Mexico, and it's a World Cup qualifier, and it's usually down to these two. It comes down to whoever finishes in the top of the group. And, you know, if the U.S. get down there and they get a tie against Mexico and they win their home game, they're more likely to be in the top of the group. And that's better for the World Cup, draw and all that kind of stuff. So the Mexico game is massive. And the fact that it's in, Cincinnati at the new stadium, I mean, I'm sure it's a hard ticket to get a hold of right now, because I know U.S. Soccer control all the ticketing and all that kind of stuff. So, I imagine it'll be super, super packed, sold out, all that kind of stuff. And it, the environment's going to be amazing for sure.
And speaking of that,
wait, are we going to win 2-0?
I hope so.
Okay.
I mean, we have to. If you come into Cincinnati, and we're taking it from, you know, they took it from Columbus and then boom, they brought it to, FCC Stadium. I mean, we have everything that gives us an advantage for us to get the result we need for sure.
And sort of dovetailing off of that, there's an effort from the city, from business leaders to land Cincinnati as a World Cup, get a World Cup round here in 2026.
Is that realistic? Tell us.
Is that realistic? I mean, do you think Cincinnati should get one?
I don't see why not, honestly. You kind of look at everything in a picture from a national team. If you have to think of, like, maybe you're having 50 to 100 staff, like, overall, if, you know, let's just say, you know, Germany, if we're to come here, you know, there's a big German population. You know, I learned it was the second largest Oktoberfest in the world. And apparently this year it was the number one because Munich didn't have theirs, right?
That's correct.
And you'd imagine their German national team here, their federation, everybody. So you have all these people in the administration part, and then you have people in the first team, and you have everything set up for these teams. So essentially you would have, they would be at a hotel or whatever. So that would be sorted out, but then they have a really, really nice training facility to train. And then you have the stadium. So they would play their home games or whatever, all the facilities that they can think of to help recover or whatever. There's a private airport. They can fly in and out right after games. It's essential. And the fact that the city's really, really nice, where people can go out and be normalish and it not be like a New York City where they can't get in and get out really. They could go out and have a nice meal, get some time off. It's like I said, it's a sleeper city. And I think it would be amazing for Cincinnati as a city to host a World Cup team, because it has everything to offer it.
There's a site visit coming, and I think they're going to roll out the welcome wagon like only Cincinnati can do. I know we have a bunch of stories coming on what that's going to look like, but they're coming to look. Maybe you should be their tour guide, I feel like.
I mean, hey, feel free to offer me up. I'm happy to help, you know? But I think, honestly, I think teams would be – federations would be stupid not to look because of everything that this city has to offer. And one thing is that there's soccer fans here. You know, you don't want to go to a place where there's not soccer fans. You know, they could have friendly games here prior to, you know, going to the World Cup. And then if Cincinnati get that bid to host a game, that's even better for the city. It's better for the host, the team that they're hosting. I think it's a win. I think they'll definitely get something for sure.
Well, that's what I wanted to ask you too. Is that you know there are bigger markets, there are cities that have a lot more amenities than Cincinnati. But when you look at Jeff, having grown up in Massachusetts, having played all your youth ball, your college ball at West Virginia, Rhode Island. You've been all over this country playing soccer, national team, MLS. When you think about just fan bases and fan support for the sport, where does Cincinnati rank in America among soccer support in your mind?
In my mind, and from what I've seen, and since I've been here with the stadium and everything like that,
yeah,
I'd say in the top five at least.
Yeah,
and I'm saying that truthfully of if you, you know, you have Seattle that I remember they had 30 plus thousand season ticket holders, you know, on the regular. I know Portland was big and with that, but they're consistent and whatever. But then you'd go to like, you'd play in LA and LA would say like, oh yeah, we have, we sold out, we sold the most tickets, but you go there on a game on a Saturday and there would be no one there because there's something else to do in LA. Like there's always something, there's always a big party or a big event. There's always something going on. Mm-hmm. We're here, like, and that takes away from, that takes away from the fan. If you look at, even if they could be winning the league when I was in the MLS, when they were like number one, they still didn't have anybody in the stadium and you could feel it. Like it was empty. And you know, you look around and you look at the leagues now and FC Cincinnati is up there. At the top because they have a really, really true fan base that are, loyal, you know, and you see the amount of just walking around the city or going to a park with my son and my missus and you see FC Cincinnati shirts everywhere, like everywhere.
You do. You're right. Yeah.
It's crazy. You don't see that other places. You just don't. You know, you look at Atlanta, they have the, you know, the big stadium and stuff like that. That's different. That's special. Like that is a football stadium and, but it's not a soccer specific. It doesn't feel, it feels like when you go there and you're playing a game, it feels, this is like an NFL game because they throw all the glitz and all the shows and all that stuff before a game. And it's like, this doesn't feel like a soccer match, you know, where here, when you go into the stadium at, TQL, like it feels like a soccer match. And I would say for 100% because you look around anywhere you go, you'll see loyal fans wearing, even though we've been poor this season, they're still loyal and they deserve all the credit.
Yeah.
So I can't let you go without asking. Do you watch Ted Lasso?
Yeah.
Do you watch Ted Lasso?
I lived it I watched the first season. I haven't watched the second season. But yeah, all that stuff is pretty spot on, I'm not going to lie.
I mean, it has really captured the hearts of America. I mean, this show, everyone watches it, and it's kind of crazy. Is the team like that? Is everybody friends? Like, what's it like?
Over in England or
no,
over here?
Like, what have you found here? Like, is it like that team that we see?
It's a little different, I would say. Here, it is definitely different here because of, you know, the gap and a lot of the players. Some guys are inexperienced, some guys are experienced, and then you have some guys that, you know, are Latinos and they speak Spanish and they're more, you know, more comfortable with one another and stuff.
That's true. Yeah, through the magic of TV, everybody on that team speaks English.
Yes. So the hard thing is everybody does get along 100%. They have good banter and everybody jokes around and stuff. But I would say it's not as like similar to it in the TV show or how it is over in England. And that's just based on culture, essentially. That's just based on the lifestyle of, if you think about, that is all anyone knows over in Europe, you know, football. That is their bread and butter, essentially, where here there's, you know, NFL, there's NBA, there's NHL. I mean, there's so many other sports. And then there's soccer, and soccer's climbing up and competing. And I think there's just a different culture and the mentality, I think. So the dress rooms are kind of, I would say, similar to like more of a college atmosphere, you could say. Does that make sense? In a way, and how, because most of the kids have gone through college, right? And they're kind of used to that, the way of things. And then, But yeah, no, it's still like, it's good banter. It's guys will joke around and guys will have laughs, and the older guys will take the jokes out on the younger guys, and the younger guys will call us old. And then you'll have a mixture of, you know, then we have, you know, it's good jokes, but we had a few pranks the other week that some guys were playing on each other. And
oh, do tell.
It's all good fun. It's like, you know, some guys put some things in some dress in a locker, and then some other guys took their clothes and put it in water, then put it in the freezer, and then hung it up, and then it was just a nice rock. So it's good. It's just to keep guys, like, you know, especially when you're going through a tough time, to try and stay positive and to keep the morale essentially going, and for guys to keep fighting and biting into, buying into just staying positive and enjoying what you do, but keep working hard. So, yeah, you have bits of banter here and there like that.
36-year-olds aren't supposed to have that much fun with their teams, man, you know?
Yeah, you have to, you know?
Yeah, no doubt.
I've been through moments in this, my career, where things are tough, and, you know, you just got to just keep grinding it out, and you know there's some light at the end of the tunnel eventually, and things will improve. It won't happen overnight, but it will. It will 100%. We have an amazing ownership, Jeff Birding, and now, it, you know, him getting in the new GM and everything like that. I think there's only positives to come, and in due time, everything will work out, and we'll be where we belong.
I have read this. The Inquirer soccer reporter Pat Brennan has been all over this. It does seem like a page is being turned here over this off season.
Yeah, it's like I said, it's been tough, you know, for me. I've played 70 something games this season. It's been a long, long year for me, and, you know, mentally, physically, everything, really. And the transition, and, you know, I'm not used to losing as much as I have been, and games where we shouldn't have lost, or games you should win, or see it win out, and but then there's the effect of, and I've been through it, where winning becomes an easier, you know, it's a mentality thing, or just it gets you, and once you're in this, it becomes a habit essentially, and it's really hard to break. But the only way to break it is just to keep fighting through, and you have to do the nitty gritty things, and then eventually it will turn its tide, but you gotta have this, everybody's gotta have that mentality. And I think it's been hard this season essentially for that. And, but like I said, I have faith, and I know there's no doubt in my mind that we'll be back stronger for sure, and finish the season hopefully strong, and kick some butt for the next five games, and then be ready for next year and start the season with a big positive. You know,
how much longer are you going to play?
That's up to FCC, man.
Well, definitely, like, is at this, least a year and a half, right? Because your contract's for 2 years.
Is this it though? Like, you'll finish your career in Cincinnati?
I don't know, honestly. It really, like, you know, I've played 70 some games a season. I feel pretty good physically. I'm sure the guys, the young guys, and the guys around me would be like, oh, you're always on the table and stuff like that. You're getting your treatment. I'm like, hey, you got to take, as you get older, you got to take more and more time to take care of yourself to make sure you get right for all the games. And, but no, I feel great. And I know I have next year. I'm looking forward to that. And that will be like kind of a normal season. Essentially, I won't have, two seasons, three seasons and one, really.
Yeah.
And then, you know, we'll kind of see from there. And then, you know, hopefully I mean, I guess it depends on how I do, but, like I said, I wouldn't be upset if I was, offered to play another year and then stay. So that would be 3 years. So, but yeah, like I said, it's kind of one of those things where just I have to perform next year and play well. So, yeah, we'll go from there.
Well, Jeff, this has been great, and all the best to you, and love your mentality, your positive approach. And, you know, if I could sum up your approach on this, is that you really are focused on being a part of the solution here and getting this, this thing turned around. And I commend you for that.
Yeah. You know, and that was the one thing when I was kind of talking to FCC and getting the pitch, there were, you know, other teams that I was interested in and really kind of leaning towards. But, you know, going back to a place where I started my career or having the opportunity to come here and start with something new and knowing that their situation, the difficulties that they were kind of starting off with, and they needed some veteran experience, and that this could be a really good possibility and a good move for me professionally to give my experience and to give my knowledge and to help the club and help the team in every way I possibly can. And, you know, and that's on the pitch and off the pitch as well. So for me, I care because I see it in my neighborhood with people that have FCC, flags outside their house and they're wearing the gear. And it's funny. Sometimes I'll be, you know, putting my son on his little scooter and we're running down it. And then, you know, just a random person will be like, keep going, keep fighting. We're FCC supporters through and through. And like, you kind of hear that and you're like, it just puts a smile on my face. Cause it's like, yeah, I know we're going through a tough time and I hope they appreciate that I'm, you know, trying to do my best, but being a, trying to be a positive influence and trying to help in any way I can. It's I see the potential of this club and where it can be and where it can go. And, the sky's the limit, to be honest, because it has everything. And that starts with the ownership and it starts with Jeff Birding and it goes its way down because, they really do care. And it happens so quick with the stadium and the training facility. It's like, all right, boom, brand new team. We're going to win the league and we're going to win everything. And it's not as easy as that, really. It just takes time. And I guess that's why, that's my goal to be here and do that as much as I can to help in every single way. So, yeah.
Good stuff, Jeff. Thanks so much for joining us here today.
It's a pleasure. Anytime I'm available. You just let me know.
Thanks again to Jeff Cameron for joining us here today. And Sherry, this brings us to our That's So Cincinnati moment of the week. You got it. What is it?
I hate that it's always food for some of this time of the segment, but this is a city of very distinct food. And my brother came to visit this weekend, and he wanted to do two things, and we had a very quintessential Friday night. We went to the Montgomery Inn.
Boathouse. Fantastic.
And we went to Grater's afterwards.
And you can never go wrong with those two things. You can't.
There might have been some large orders of ribs ordered by other people in my family. Bring them home. They weren't finished. And by midnight, they were gone.
He came down from Northeast Ohio?
He did.
It's first time he's been in Cincy for a long time, right?
Yes. And so, but he really did. He wanted to go get the ribs. And we had, you know, I made a reservation a while ago. We got seated by the window and it was a lovely, it was kind of early since we brought my dad with us. It was a lovely evening and just the river walk of all the people who were kind of going by, rollerblading, bike riding. when we were leaving, like people just kind of walking around, kind of waiting for their Montgomery Inn table. It was really vibrant over there. That was kind of fun to see as the sun was getting ready to set. And it was like, it's a good city.
And you don't give why do I feel like I keep saying this? Like, you don't give that much more Cincinnati than dot, dot, dot. I have to catch myself.
Our podcast is called That's So Cincinnati, so I feel like it's okay here.
But honestly, like, for if my mom and dad came into town, they're like, hey, take us to dinner. I mean, they haven't been to Cincinnati for a while. Like, yeah, that would be among the top things, like Montgomery Inn or Skyline.
I will say, when it was being discussed in the Coolidge household, Jack raised his hand to vote for a favorite, like two of our favorite past guests. Jack was just like, great, we'll go to Jeff Ruby's. And I was like a little bit more low-key for this event. Yeah. I was like, we will go there again. I was like, but just this time, we're going to go do something different. But he was like, great, Jeff Ruby's. I was like, I'm raising a mini sherry, I guess.
That a boy, Jack. He loved that. I still got to take Reed to, we still have a gift from last Christmas to Jeff Ruby's. So.
You know what you could do? They do have lunch around Christmas time.
That's right.
It's a favorite, kind of pop in with sources, not the full menu. At least the first year it wasn't. They might offer some of those things now, but it's a lovely experience during Christmas time.
And they always run the special and the gift cards too.
And apparently,
apparently that's where my mom took advantage of it. So anyway, Sherry, it's good to see you. And we'll catch up with you. You're going to be all over this election, mayor's race. We've got some stories coming up on that. Follow Sherry at Sharon Coolidge on Twitter. And obviously in the Inquirer, Cincinnati.com. Catch me on Twitter at Jay Williams Cincy. And we will catch you next week.